It's hour number two of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Oh, the conversations we have off the air. If only we could bring them on. At 1:45, where are we at in society? Sam Pika is producing, which means it's the latest edition of Am I the A-Hole, which, of course, I always am. At 1:30, we're having a conversation around the Austin Film Festival and one of the top movies showing this weekend. And it involves an old friend of the morning show. Stay tuned for that one. And in mere minutes, it's our weekly chat with Brian Jones of CBS. I'm Trey Elling. Sam Pika is behind the glass, and sitting across from me is Chad Hastings.
Yes, indeed. Hour number two on a Thursday. Got a lot going on. Football, another big football weekend coming up. Not tonight. Tonight's Giants-Eagles. That's not big football at all. We'll get to some actual football after that, including the Cowboys in Washington. All right, that doesn't feel much like more football. Pittsburgh and Tennessee. Now, that's real NFL football. We got a lot of college football to get into as well. And we have this conversation to have. I told you, the last two people on the show are involved in one of the weirdest moments of my life. This guy convinced the last guy that was on the show that I was a racist. And then that guy came to the restaurant to beat me up. I somehow talked my way out of it while the next guy just laughed and laughed and laughed. Let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe Cantina Hotline and talk to Brian Jones of CBS Sports. He's wearing those great suits on TV, but don't let him fool you. He will make Mark Henry think you're racist if he gets a mind to it. What's up, Brian?
Truth no fable, you call Mark Henry a gorilla. La, la, la.
That is not what happened. Come on, stop telling that story.
That was hilarious. Oh my goodness, you're already pale. Your ass got paler.
Oh.
I was like, whoa, Mark, I'm joking, dog. He didn't say that, man.
Hey, he walked in the door at front door of that restaurant, and I thought I might be about to get thrown out the back window of that restaurant.
That was hilarious, man. No, Chad is, you all right with me, dog. Well, I'll be your one black friend.
There it is. you'll be my plus one? Brian Jones is my plus one. Yeah, Brian and I were just rolling lyrics from Beverly Hills Cop, and it got me in trouble. But that was a while ago. That was a while ago. Brian, from laughter to sadness, I guess. I don't know how to transition here because the Longhorns just aren't playing good football. I know they've had an off week now. You've had to deal with these last couple of games. I feel so bad for you on CBS because they get all over you when the Longhorns don't play well. But you've always been an honest voice about the Longhorns, even when you were walking the sidelines as the sideline reporter. You were as honest as you could be. You're honest on a national level now. So give me an idea of what you think we're going to see. They had a chance to maybe clear their heads. Tom Herman said it was cathartic last week, and they did more one-on-ones, and he feels like the running and game and run defense will be better and all this stuff. What do you think we're going to see Saturday?
All that honesty got me called into the principal's office a couple of times, if you recall.
I wasn't going to mention that part.
Why didn't you ask us? Well, hell, obviously y'all didn't know. That's why I didn't ask you.
Hell, not just called into the principal's office. It got you sent to a completely different school altogether at a certain point.
Yes, it did, man. But I don't know. To answer your question, I don't know what the hell to expect because we've been told in subsequent weeks that things were fixable and they were getting fixed, and they weren't. So, you know, at least we haven't heard that they won Sunday or Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday. Hopefully they can win on a Saturday. So more one-on-ones, great. More Oklahoma drill, great. Whatever it takes to become a more physical-minded football team, and winning be damned. Just go out there and be physical. I want to see that. I want to see 11 guys on defense running their behinds to the ball. I want to see 11 guys on defense hitting the guy in front of them, engaging them, striking them, shedding them, and getting to the ball carrier. That's what I want to see. I want to see some fundamentals. I don't need to see anything flashy. Just show me that you know how to use those pads, that helmet, because they hand them out to you for a reason. I just want to see simple things, man, basic fundamentals, the rudimentary elements of the game. If you can master those, the rest is gravy. So just show me after a bye week, which Texas hadn't fared too well after a bye week, just show me that you know how to play football. It's simple stuff. I mean, if you got to pare it down even more, as I've said on your show before, you remember that scene in Any Given Sunday, we made the game plan simple enough because y'all dumb enough. I don't think it's because they dumb. I just you're not teaching the fundamentals. Now, it's one thing for the players at the collegiate level to be to not be taught fundamentals. It's another damn thing when I got my Cowboys defenders saying they're not being coached right. Well, hell, you're a professional. You get paid a nice largesse. You should know the fundamentals of the game. They shouldn't have to come in and teach you that, blocking and tackling, and especially pride, which the Cowboys have none of right now. But at the collegiate level, hell, Leon Fuller taught me how to run into things more consistently. That's all I want to see, and how to run into them properly. Instead of thinking I could get around every block using athleticism and widening the hole for the ball carrier to run through, it's just simple stuff, man. They can master that and find some type of mentality that says, hey, I'm in a bad disposition. I'm about to whip your ass. That's all I want.
Yep.
Do you have faith that the linebackers can figure out the run fits thing? I mean, that's been their biggest weakness on the defensive side of the football, and a big reason why they gave up so many yards on the ground last week to or 2 weeks ago to Oklahoma.
Well, first of all, those guys up ahead of them have to hold the line of scrimmage and give them angles to scrape. That's first and foremost, because as I told you last time we talked, I wouldn't want to play behind those cats. They'd have me back there in the secondary because they're being pushed off the ball. They're taking these lateral steps. There's no pop when they engage, if they engage, with offensive linemen. So take care of your damn business and just trust that your buddy's going to get in his gap fit. And as far as the linebackers are concerned, they need to dissect quicker. You see what's happening. I mean, I'm watching film, and the play, the running back's at the mesh point with the quarterback, then he's a couple yards removed from that point, and I got a linebacker still in his stance. What the hell are you looking at? What are you looking for? Everything's been defined for you. It's right there. And the plays that they were being gouged on were plays we learned in Pop Warner, man. And you can get kill shots. And those counter OTs, you don't even have to engage the lineman if you play it right as a linebacker, because you can hide behind your big boys up front, and it's just you and that back, and you can sneak up on him because you scrape tight enough off your defensive tackles. You got a kill shot right there, man. I got some of the biggest hits of my life, Pop Warner, junior high school, and college, and even in the NFL, playing that correctly. So there are opportunities to make plays. Hopefully they've watched the same film I've watched, because I'm watching what they watch. I get the same damn film, and if they can't see it and they can't fix that, there's no hope for them.
Talking with Brian Jones of CBS Sports. Brian, you've told us that in your time at Texas, there were player protests going on at times for things going on in your community. Obviously, those kind of things can splinter a football team. In addition to the football issues, do you think that this Eyes of Texas thing could be messing with the Longhorns' heads? They've been asked questions about it this week and saying things like, I thought we were done with this. I thought it was behind us. It's a distraction. Do you think this could add to their problems?
Okay, taking what you've just shared with me in their comments this week, if they have decided as a team, and I thought they had as well because they hadn't been hanging out there all season, and then someone thought it was a good time since they lost now 5 out of 6 to their arch rival and they're sitting there with back-to-back losses, someone thought it was a good time to, say there's only one player and it's the guy who had the best game and a losing cause versus Oklahoma and Sam Ehlinger, who's lingering out here to sing the Eyes of Texas. And Sam even cleared that up and said it was overblown. I wasn't out there for the express purposes of the Eyes of Texas. I was just lingering and saying by the coaches, and it came on, so I acknowledged it. And so I don't think, from what I've been able to glean this week, that it's a fractured locker room, or as fractured as we were led to believe. And once again, these guys decided prior to the season they weren't going to stay out there for it. So that's their prerogative. And we can get upset all we want. As I said Tuesday on our show, man, if they were winning, this wouldn't even be a conversation.
Right.
This team was sitting there 4-0 or 3-1. If they had beaten Oklahoma, we wouldn't be talking about this. So people want to make it a big subject right now, and you got people change.org trying to get people to stand with Sam Ehlinger. Hell, we stand with Sam Ehlinger, but he stands with his teammates in that locker room because they've debated this and it's been litigated. And I understand the only reason we're revisiting it is because Texas is not winning. If people want to use this as a reason to be upset with those young men, that's fine. They have their beliefs. I have my beliefs of how we can reimagine, repurpose the song, and hopefully you know, extend an olive branch to everyone who's involved. And the players have seen fit to go a different route, and that's their right. It's their locker room. It's their football team. And I don't think you can force them to do any damn thing. And if you try, you're going to force them to move on to a different program. And instead of commemorating the 1970 national title team, we'll go back to being the 1970 national football team with no brothers on the field. So I think they need to get past it. It sounds like in the locker room they have, you know, throughout our society, throughout America, there's a reckoning that's being taken place. And a lot of history has been hidden, especially from black folk. And now the truths are coming to the forefront, and we're addressing them. And some things we may be able to reclaim and repackage, and other things that we're going to have to get rid of. So it needs to happen. It should happen a long, long time ago, but it's happening now and in a real way there on the 40 acres. So hopefully the players have said, hey, this is what we agreed upon prior to the season. We're going to stick to that, and we're moving forward. Let's go win some football games.
BJ, kind of weird timing that UT is wearing all-white uniforms at home for the first time since 1950, since University of Texas back in 1950 was, well, also all-white, too.
Oh, come on.
Just seems like they missed a little detail there.
So wrong.
They were all white in the 70s, too.
Yeah.
70s. That's my point I was making. So, hey, man.
Well, you didn't hear the update on this, by the way. Initially, they had said it was to show support for the 1970 team. Then they had to retract that. Apparently, the details are not being paid attention to on that side of things either. They're like, oh, we're not gonna celebrate the 1970 team until a couple games down the road.
Well, so who are they commemorating by wearing those uniforms?
I honestly don't know. They're just doing 1950 uniforms because it's been 70 years since they wore the icy whites at home.
Well, whatever it takes to get a W, I'm all for that. But, we just, and I'm going to say we because I have the University of Texas has a blank check in my emotions. So I'll say we, even though that's frowned upon in broadcasting, but we can't seem to get out of our own way. It's just one hiccup after another. Winning cures everything. So if we can just go out and do that, if they can go out and do that, I don't think any of this other stuff will matter. But I like the fact they are, they're going to delve a little deeper into, you know, what's transpired with the song and other things on campus and get to the bottom of it. And those who are fine with the status quo, they're going to get their toes stepped on. That's unfortunate. But, hell, like I said earlier, a lot of history has been hidden and whitewashed and revised. So we need to get to the bottom of a lot of this stuff.
Brian, give us a quick pick before we let you go. Iowa State, Oklahoma State. We're going to find out who the best team in the Big 12 is at least this week. What do you think happens in Stillwater?
I'm going to take Iowa State, but of course, Oklahoma State coming off a couple weeks with no action. And they're fairly healthy. Spencer Sanders at quarterback could play. He's back to 100%. We'll see if he's rusty, but I like how physical Iowa State plays. The same can be said for Kansas State. And I know Oklahoma State, their defense is living up to the hype right now, only allowing 9 points a game. They've got the backers, Malcolm Rodriguez and Amon Ogbong Baniga. Hope I don't have to say that on television Saturday. but they're playing lights out, man. These guys are flying around. But I like Iowa State. And, you know, they were able to limit the deep balls versus Oklahoma. And they'll have to do that again. But the key to knocking off John Heacock's defense is balance. You got to be able to run against that three-man front. That if they can do that, Oklahoma State definitely has a damn good chance. It looked like they've gotten that running game churning here of late. I mean, it was Kansas the last time out. But I'm going to go with Iowa State. That's when Brock Purdy jumped up on the scene, man, 2 years ago.
That's
when he
true.
Came off the bench and the upset, the huge upset there on the road. So
that is true.
We'll see what they're working with, but I'll go with Iowa State.
All right. And, Brian, don't worry. All CBS is going to have you saying on Saturday is touchdown and Mac Jones over and over and over again. That's what you're going to be breaking down. The 2:30 on CBS is Bama at Tennessee. I got a feeling that one ain't going to be close, but we'll see. We'll see. I hope for Brian's sake and CBS's sake, I hope it is. And my sake, too.
How did you get a look at the rundown? Because I actually am breaking down Mac Jones.
There you go. I know why. I watched that team. It's the first thing I'd be breaking down, too. That dude can chunk it, man.
God, he's good. He can't cover all those wide receivers, and they just smack you in the mouth. It's just tough.
Yeah, they're good.
Such a difference watching those games and a lot of other games. We'll just say that.
We'll be watching you on Saturday. So y'all have a good one, and I'll hope it's close for you. Thank you for the time, as always.
All right, guys. Appreciate you. Hook 'em.
That's Brian Jones. Check out CBS Sports at Jones Info Mo on Twitter. And yes, it's Bama, Tennessee, the 2:30 kick on CBS, keeping that tradition going in October. Up next, we'll talk Hard Luck Love Song and the Austin Film Festival. It debuts this weekend. We'll tell you how you can see it. We've seen it. It's fantastic. We'll tell you about it. We'll talk to the director and a producer coming right up. So don't move. It's The Horn. All right, it's nothing but Bob Marley today. What's this one, Sam?
This is a song called Misty Morning.
There you go. Trey wants Marley because he's about to go to a beach wedding and he wants to get in the mood.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, he's already leaning, baby, already leaning. We'll get this great movie conversation coming to you. But before that, we have another chance for you to win the $50 gift card to the UT Co-op online store. All you have to do is snap the picture with the Coors Light Longhorn display. Go to Total Wine today. It's Total Wine on Brody Lane in Sunset Valley. Snap the picture and use the hashtag Longhorns Made to Chill for your chance to win. You can go to hornfm.com. Find all the locations, and while you're at Total Wine, get all stocked up on Coors Light for the Longhorns and Baylor this weekend. Trey, let's talk about this awesome movie.
All right, so the Austin Film Festival kicks off this weekend. Much like everything else in these dystopian times, the festival is virtual this year, but there are still a ton of insightful panels to check out and great films to watch online. Passes can be purchased at austinfilmfestival.com. One of the top movies this year is the brainchild of an Austin couple, one of whom you may remember from Bucky and Aaron's tenure on The Zone more than 15 years ago. The movie is called Hard Luck Love Song, and it's based on the song Just Like Old Times by singer-songwriter Todd Snyder. It stars Michael Dorman, Sophia Bush, Dermot Mulroney, Eric Roberts, RZA, and more. The film was written and directed by Austin native Justin Corsby with his wife and longtime friend of the show and radio station, Allison Smith, serving as the lead producer. You may remember Allison from her days as a lead anchor at CBS Austin. Together, they have founded and run Synthetic Pictures, an internationally recognized award-winning production company specializing in commercials, branded content, and films and entertainment with offices in L.A., Austin, and New York City. And both are on the Vaqueros hotline now to talk to us about the film and more. Allison, Justin, thank you so much for the time. Great to hear from you.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having us.
Allison, the last we heard from you, you were hitting eject on the career in media to get married and then shift your focus elsewhere. So how did you end up going from TV news to this current profession?
Yeah, it all kind of fits together when you see the big picture, but it was a big change from every day covering news and sports and being in Austin and you know, being in the place that I love so much, the hometown that I love. But Justin and I got married back in 2007, and pretty quickly thereafter, I finished up my contract at CBS Austin, and I was working as a sideline reporter with the Dallas Cowboys some and with NFL Network and Blue Star Media, and that was awesome. I loved all of it, truly. But we moved to Los Angeles, and I took sort of a freelance West Coast correspondent position with CBS News. So I had grown up kind of in news and then moved to sports and was in sports for several years and then went back to news for a little bit of time. And that lasted 3 or 4 years that I was covering wildfires and earthquakes and, you know, all things West Coast for CBS News, which was crazy because I was a Texas girl and never lived in California before. And Los Angeles is a different world on its own out here. But I love it. I've been here 13 years going back and forth between Austin and LA, and I just love those places so much. And so anyway, around 2012, I got pregnant, and that's a really hard job to do, chasing wildfires and earthquakes when you're having a baby. And so I decided to sort of pivot again, and Justin and I started working together. And Justin already had synthetic pictures for a long time before that. And so
he
just kept doing what he was doing. I just had to learn kind of a whole nother industry and become a mom too. So it was a big change for me, not so much for him. But maybe, I don't know, Justin, probably a change for you in that you had to, you started working with your wife, not just at home.
still learning is what I...
Well, Justin, you've obviously learned quite a bit. Congratulations on Hard Luck Love Song. Both Chad and I watched it last night. Chad watched, I think he finished it up this morning. Just blown away by the performances and just the overall experience that was this film. For people who are unfamiliar, what is Hard Luck Love Song all about?
Sure. Well, thank you so much for checking it out. I'm you know, thrilled that you guys enjoyed it. It, you know, for people in Austin where I'm born and raised, I think it really kind of speaks to kind of the vibe and atmosphere of what our town's all about. So the movie is, I describe it as being about a down on his luck troubadour living out of cheap motels and making bad decisions.
Kind of that's a pretty good description there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it goes back. I grew up in Austin. I was just to give you the backstory. I was born in a house with no air conditioning in Clarksville and raised by a kind of bohemian poet single mother. So not much more Austin than that. And I grew up in and around the music scene. My mom was friends with a bunch of people who ran singer-songwriter bars in the 70s and 80s. And so I was like a little kid in the 80s running around some of these kind of well-known singer-songwriter bars, watching, you know, people like Townes Van Zandt, Lucinda Williams, and Jerry Jeff Walker, and Butch Hancock, and Jimmy Gilmore, and people like that. As a young kid, and just kind of in and around that whole kind of Americana music, roots music kind of scene. And then, growing up in Austin is just such a rich music, you know, culture. Kind of transitioned to being more kind of in and around the Liberty Lunch scene when I was kind of a skateboard juvenile delinquent kid. Hanging out on the drag and hanging out at places like Liberty Lunch, watching all the punk bands and stuff in the 80s that were playing there. And so I kind of absorbed this kind of music scene and also kind of this kind of artists living on kind of the periphery and kind of this just, you know, kind of sort of down and out Austin kind of slacker style environment that was just so rich with interesting characters. So, I'm a huge music fan and, but fairly genre agnostic when it comes to music. I'm into tons of different types of music, but I'm particularly drawn to Americana music and roots music. And, Todd Snyder, this singer-songwriter who had his own stint in Austin at one point, is a musician who I'm just a huge fan of. He's kind of comes from the John Prine, kind of Jerry Jeff Walker, kind of, rambling troubadour, type singer songwriter. And I was a huge fan of his work and really into kind of not only his songs, but he's also this incredible storyteller. One time a couple of years ago, Alice and I were at Hog Auditorium watching one of his shows. He started, played the first few chords of the song Just Like Old Times, and an idea just kind of popped in my head. And I turned to Allison and I said, hey, remind me after this show, for me to tell you about an idea that just popped into my head, how we could take this song and turn it into something that would work well for an indie film.
Because it's kind of here, Justin, and just say that I might have guys rolled my eyes just for a quick second. I don't know if either of you are married to artists, but if you're married to an artist, it's amazing. They have lots of ideas, which are all exciting, but they don't always come to fruition. And so you have to kind of pick and choose which ones you get behind.
But they're all brilliant, right? They're all brilliant.
Every single one is brilliant.
Brilliant.
Just a matter of figuring out how to bring them to life. No, there definitely was some eye rolling. You know, I probably come up with ideas like that kind of every day. So there was definitely some eye rolling. But we were kind of in the process of setting up another movie that I had written, kind of noir thriller detective thing set in Texas. And so we were working on that. And then this idea kind of sparked, and it was what we were attracted to by it was pretty contained. You know, the song has, you know, some characters and a pretty simple kind of contained story, really rich and dynamic kind of characters and layered characters that we thought would make an interesting jumping off point. From there,
It was pretty quick after that, because he came up with the idea and pretty quickly he wrote a full outline and kind of created a treatment for it. And then we popped on a plane to Portland, where Todd was performing like a 3-night retrospective tour, because he's from Portland originally. And so we went and pitched him, to license the song and to make a film out of it. And guys, I have to say, like, I came up in news and sports. This was totally out of my realm. But it was like being on a wild roller coaster ride. Just the whole process is so insane, and I learned so much through the process. But even just those first moments of watching him come up with the idea, watching him put it on paper, and then pitching it to the artist and seeing, you know, can we make this happen? And, luckily, he said yes. And so we were off and running at that point.
I'm assuming part of the fun process for you, Allison, of course you as well, Justin, was the casting process, considering just how incredible a cast that was put together. I was initially drawn to this film because I'm a huge fan of the star, Michael Dorman, from the role he served, the starring role that he served in the Amazon Prime show Patriot. People on this radio station are honestly probably tired of hearing me recommend that show. Was the script written specifically with him in mind, and just how did he end up on this picture?
You know, that's a great question. Yes, Patriot was something that we were drawn to. The script was written prior to Patriot coming out.
Okay.
And we finished up the script and started the casting process here in L.A. Around the same time that Patriot was coming out. Now, Amazon Prime did that weird thing where they had their pilot come out like a year or something before the rest of the show dropped. So I think the pilot had maybe been out, but not fully discovered by people yet. But so we started the casting process, and we were meeting with a bunch of actors, some of them very well known and whatnot, and all very talented. And there was a lot of interest in the project. It was very, you know, we had a big challenge. We needed to cast somebody, not to get into too many spoilers or anything, but we needed to cast somebody who could be a great actor, who could play music and sing, because we have a lot of actual music played in the movie, and also could play pool. So lots of checkboxes that are quite challenging in order to be able to find that kind of needle in the haystack. So we were kind of scouring all the major agencies to find the right fit, and meeting with some, you know, some great actors, and there was a lot of interest, and we were down the path, you know, discussing it with several people, and Michael's management company, basically alerted us to him. They were like, look, there's this great actor. He lives in Australia. He's a Kiwi by birth, but lives in Australia, and he's just done this amazing show for Amazon called Patriot. It's about to drop, or was in the process of dropping. And he plays music. He has a background playing pool and billiards some, and he's just a tremendous talent and is about to break and become, you know, kind of a household name and a big deal. We think you should check him out. And now we were like, okay, sounds interesting. Haven't heard of him, but, you know, we don't know everybody out there. And so they sent us the link to the trailer, and within, you know, 20 minutes of watching this thing, we were like, this is the guy. I mean, if you remember in that first pilot, he plays a Townes Van Zandt song in the show. And, you know, Townes Van Zandt is, you know, certainly kind of a prototype for the type of character that this, you know, movie is based on. And so once we saw that, his acting chops are amazing. He's just so talented. And we saw that he could play music and sing and do all these things that we needed him to be able to do. And so we were just, you know, from the minute we saw that, we were just like, that's the guy. He happened to be coming into town to do a bunch of award stuff for Amazon. They were doing all this Emmy, you know, kind of tour and all sorts of other award, Gold Globe kind of presentation stuff and all that. And so he came into town and we met with him, hit it off immediately, and hitched our wagons to him as our lead character.
Yeah, he was fantastic. The chemistry between he and Sophia Bush is amazing. They're both so wonderfully flawed and likable at the same time in this movie. They're fantastic. It's called Hard Luck Love Song. You go to austinfilmfestival.com. And again, the premiere is Saturday at 8:15. So go to austinfilmfestival.com to find out how to get a hold of this movie. Justin, one guy I wanted to ask you about was Dermot Mulroney. I think a lot of people know the name. If not, they'll know his face when they see it. I like a lot of his work, including the darker stuff. I'm a big fan of Shameless on Showtime. He was great there. And he plays a character in this movie that a Julia Roberts or Deborah Messing would not be dating in a rom-com. Talk about working with – how was he to work with? Because he's always been one of my favorites.
Dermot is amazing. Enjoyed working with him so much. He's such a great guy. You know, his first movie he ever did was Young Guns, and – growing up as a kid in the 80s, that was like a seminal movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, there's those incredible scenes where they're like on peyote and like shooting at chickens and roosters and amazing. So like, I've been a long time Dermot Mulroney fan, and he's just such a great actor. I think he was engaged to Julia Roberts at one point. They did a bunch of movies together. They're longtime good friends. He is, you know, he's led movies, you know, big movies where he's been kind of the lead character or the love interest, like you mentioned, in some of those rom-coms. And he's just such a, you know, he's done so much. There's a great movie called Living in Oblivion that I really like, which is about independent filmmaking that he made in the 90s, where he plays this cinematographer that's just amazing. He wears an eye patch and his name's Wolf, and just quotable lines throughout the movie. Peter Dinklage is in that movie too, and there's great kind of interaction between all of them. So yeah, longtime fan. He was great. What, you know, I don't think I've ever seen him do something quite like this. You know, we proposed this crazy haircut that he has in it, and
which he ended up loving. I'll say, by the way, he loved the haircut so much that he told us that his son, who's like a teenager, was like, "I dig that haircut on you, Dad. It makes you look so cool." And then he shot with us all night one night, and then the next he had to fly out at like 4 or 5 a.m. after shooting all night to go shoot in South Carolina with Justin. Remind me, the Righteous Gemstones.
Yep. Yeah.
And so he showed up to play a preacher in that show with a like basically a mohawk haircut, and they were like, "What are we gonna do with this?" And so they end up, you know, kind of giving him, I mean, sort of a Nazi cut after that. But anyway, it's just a total transformation for him. And in fact, people see him and immediately they don't even realize it's him at first, because he's, you know, he just plays this such a rough and tumble character.
Well, especially with the gold grill in too.
Yeah, he's got the grill, some neck and face tattoos. There's a lot of neck and face tattoos in this movie. And I keep joking that Allison and I are going to get commemorative neck tattoos to celebrate. But
brilliant, brilliant idea.
No, thank you. But no, I mean, he's great. And also one of his henchmen, Randall, the really big guy, who he kind of runs with, he's a Texan as well.
Oh.
And Randall was in, he's been in some pretty big stuff recently.
Deadpool. And so, he has a pretty well regarded kind of small part in the Deadpool movies. I think they call him Fat Gandalf, if I remember correctly, but he's kind of got, I mean, this man is huge. He was a professional wrestler at one point. He is probably he's not 7 feet tall, but close to 7 feet tall and just humongous.
I want to do a comparison for people because Justin shot with JJ Watt a couple of years ago. We did a commercial campaign for Ford with JJ, and Randall next to Justin, JJ next to Justin, you know, JJ's just a huge guy. Randall next to Justin looked like two of Justin. JJ just looked way bigger than Justin. Randall looked like two of him.
Wow.
I mean, he would dwarf JJ.
I'm not a small human. So when she says this, she's serious. This man is humongous and the sweetest, nicest guy you've ever met in your life.
Thank goodness.
There are a lot of times they're big teddy bears. Now, I don't want to ask too many questions about this movie because I don't want to spoil anything for people. But the last questions from us, guys, and Justin, I guess this is directed at you first since you were responsible for it. I'm a sucker for a single shot scene. It's a reason why Children of Men is one of my all-time favorite movies. And we get a single shot early in this film. Just how difficult was it to shoot the $2,000 game between Dorman and Mulroney's characters?
Great question. And it's one I want to dance around a little bit because I don't want to spoil too much to let the listeners in on a little bit. So there is a pull hustling segment of this movie. It's kind of an important aspect of this movie. And, you know, I'm a big fan of The Hustler and The Color of Money. And I think some of the pool work that we do in this movie rivals those. And in this one particular case, the shot you're talking about that's all done in one take, I would say we gave them a run for their money.
Agreed.
There is a moment in this movie that, without revealing too much, that people will probably have their minds blown a little bit, especially if they're pool players, pool hustlers, because there's some serious pool that happens in this movie, and in particular this one scene, which is pretty remarkable. I don't want to give away all the details or get into too much of the kind of tricks of the trade, but I will tell you that Michael Dorman can play pool like a real hustler, and when he flew into town to come to rehearse and shoot the movie, he immediately was like, take me to a bar with a pool table. I gotta keep my game up. And I went and I can play pool pretty well myself, but went and shot some stick with him, and he was lights out in those rehearsal days, and he's lights out in the movie. And he trained, not only did he train for the music and the acting, but he trained specifically for this pool hustling stuff. And I think the people who are pool players and pool fans out there will appreciate some of the stuff we were able to do.
Absolutely agree. That was a fantastic scenes. Hard Luck Love Song. Go to AustinFilmFestival.com and get all set up for Saturday. Saturday at 8:15 is when it debuts. Allison Smith and Justin Corsby, nice enough to join us. Justin, the director and writer. Allison is the one that fosters the artist's dreams. That's what she does. And she did an incredible job here. You guys, thank you so much. Allison, it's great to hear from you. I know a lot of people in Austin were glad to get updated on your situation. And best of luck to both of you with this movie. It was fantastic.
And guys, Bucky and Aaron are going to try and get in touch with you to maybe have you on either tomorrow morning or maybe even early next week. Just to make sure something works out with everybody's schedules.
Cool. That's great. And it's so great to talk to you guys. I mean, when your name came up, my heart would just leapt. I was so excited to hear how you were doing and to jump on the show with you. It was super fun. And I'm going to forever take with me that I'm the one who fosters dreams.
Darn right.
Allison, I concur. When I got the email from your publicist and he identified that it was you, I was floored. And I even said in the email, like, oh my goodness, I am having a hard time writing right now, because I've thought of you over the years, because we always loved that interaction. I think it was Wednesdays at 9. Always loved having you in there just to wax poetic about whatever, sports or otherwise.
Yeah. I miss that so much. Sometime I'll come on and let's talk some sports, because I've got some things to talk about. And I figured we would start the interview by me saying, hey, Chad, congratulations. Your Aggies finally got a real SEC victory. So I figured we'd be talking that. So I'm really thrilled to talk.
Yeah, you better be glad I got that fostering dreams thing out before you said that. That's what you better be glad about.
Yeah, I don't know. Talk about football our team is not doing it hoped, and we're pretty tortured over here.
Yeah, we'll get you on sometime, Allison. We'll definitely break that down. But thank you guys so much for your time. And again, best of luck with this movie. I thought it was awesome, and I hope you get a lot of love off of it.
Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you all.
Can we say one more thing, guys?
Yeah.
Our website, hardlucklovesong.com, has a bunch of just exclusively first look released images from the film, and there's some great information on there. There's also a place to sign up so people can stay in tune with us about when there's going to be some sneak peeks and some special announcements and stuff like that that we're doing around the film. There's some exciting, unique things that we're going to be doing. There's some vehicles from the movie that we may give away in a contest at some point, and a bunch of other really kind of fun aspects to it that people can tune into either on our socials or at the website that can sign up. So that would be awesome if people check that out.
Sweet. There you go. HardLuckLoveSong.com as well. They might be selling that Nova. That'd be awesome. All right, guys. Thank you so much.
I got to get it out of my driveway, man.
There you go. That is great.
Take care, y'all.
Thank you, guys. Allison Smith, Justin Corsby, and the movie is called Hard Luck Love Song. Great stuff. Michael Dorman, Sophia Bush, we mentioned Dermot Mulroney. You said Eric Roberts and RZA at the beginning, too.
Yeah.
They fill in great. Eric Roberts, he's awesome. He's not a big part of the movie, but he has a little dialogue in there in the bar that's amazing. So check it out. Hard Luck Love Song at the Austin Film Festival, austinfilmfestival.com. That put us super late, but we don't care because it was awesome. Where are we at in society? Maybe.
That's going to be pushed back to the 2 o'clock hour.
Yeah, so Sam Pica and Am I an A-Hole probably be in the 2 o'clock hour. So we'll have other stuff coming up, too, on the horn.